taken extremely incorrectly.
I know we don't do that around here. We don't see our mindset is not to go with taunting or mocking people because of their sexual preference or identity. We treat people as people, God's creation. It doesn't matter what their gender is, race, ethnicity, age, income level. They're God's children.
And on that note, I want to welcome everybody to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. I want to thank everybody that's in the YouTube chat. I want to thank everybody that's been downloading our podcast at an extreme pace. We are humbled by it. I want to remind everybody that we are on Rumble now, rumble.com. So Rumble. Go there, go subscribe to us, Rumble our videos. I'm in shock with the reception of having only been on for a couple of days. It's amazing. And I want to thank you.
In a good way. Shocking
in a great way. And I want to thank Mike Visser for helping us out with Rumble. Give Mike Visser a big shout out. But let's welcome tonight's guest. I don't know which one to go. Okay. SimpleLifeNow.com founder, podcaster, living off the grid specialist, the man that served the country for over 20 years of his life, Gary Collins. Good to see you, Gary.
Thank you. Glad to be here. I appreciate this award.
You sound extremely excited.
The motto of the Black Panther Party, serve the people.
And of course, look at the man with the hair. From 93.1 WIBC, bam, the future of conservative talk radio, Rob Kendall.
Well, it looks like Gary's on a boat, like he's on a yacht.
He's not. He lives in a place where he's got like 70,000 acres. So it's like a visual stunt in a sense, or I can't think of the right word. But this show would not be complete, of course, without the talent. The man with a lot of talent. He's an actor. He's a writer. He's an economist. He's a physicist. He's a scientist.
Doctor, for gosh.
Former shoe salesman, lawyer, father, doctor. Saint, sinner.
Doctor.
Doctor, America's humble servant, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. And right off the bat, again, welcome everybody. I will be reading your comments. And I want to get right off the bat into, and Ben, when we were speaking today about what to talk about tonight, I said Stalin, using your word, comparing this. And then you said Stalin-esque. And I thought that was a brilliant way of capturing this regime.
Stalin-esque in the sense they don't have the toughness or the cunning or the thoroughgoing evil of Joseph Stalin, but they have the mindset to suppress their enemies or anyone who even questions them. Even if the person is not an enemy, they have the mindset to have a one party, one man, in this case, one man, one woman rule. And they have the mindset to create a party, the liberal / African-American / academic / media party that's going to run everything. And everybody else is a lower class prole like in 1984. That is the model they have in mind. There will be an inner party that can do any effing thing they want. And then the outer party is the rest of us. And we are held to a very high standard. And we can get in a lot of trouble for something very small.
Brilliantly said, Gary Collins.
Who is Stalin?
I've never heard of him. That's very funny. Who is Stalin?
Well, he only killed millions of people. No big deal.
He killed 30 million people. He killed more people than Hitler. The two main killers of all 20th century, Mao Zedong and Stalin, and then Hitler.
Yep.
And no bargain, any of them, but not one person in Stalin's Russia was ever prosecuted, tried, convicted, or served any time for this mass murder, especially of the Ukrainians.
So what you're saying is this is a... We're kind of seeing a mirror image, maybe, of what's going on, minus the killing.
A funhouse mirror.
Yeah. They're going to do it with certain
punks. I mean, Biden's a punk, but he has in mind the one-party state.
Well, yeah. I mean, I think we just went through a year pretty much of about as close to totalitarianism as you can get, honestly. I mean, this last year was shockingly socialist, for sure.
Oh, socialist is way too open and cheery for these guys. I mean, could you have imagined that the lawyer for a presidential contender would be surprised at 6 a.m. by a raid by the FBI, and still not clear what they're raiding him for? The law is sacrosanct. If you cannot have a lawyer representing you without fear of FBI agents bursting into his house at 6 a.m., you're in real trouble. We're in real trouble here.
Not one lawyer, Ben. Two.
Right, his other lawyer, two lawyers.
Yeah, they got two of them.
The woman lawyer and her husband, Joe DiGenova, Rob Kendall.
Wow.
So isn't the interesting thing with Stalin that so many people who went to the gulags believed Stalin had no idea what was going on? And they would write these letters to Stalin going, hey, help me. These really corrupt, awful government officials are doing this. And we know if the letter just gets to you, that you will save me because it was led to believe through manipulation that Stalin was the good guy.
I know, it's incredible. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead. Please go ahead, Rob.
No, I just say it's like the same thing here. It's like, no matter what, the media defends the Biden administration. I mean, I thought this menthol cigarettes thing was a perfect example. Oh, he's gonna end the war on drugs and these racist drug policies that have put African-Americans disproportionately behind bars. And the first thing he does is go after menthol cigarettes.
I know, because supposedly, and I'm sure it's true,
great point.
Blacks prefer menthol cigarettes. So he's going to save them from being murdered by the capitalist pigs at the tobacco companies by taking menthol cigarettes off the market. To me, a poor old man in a pink terry cloth robe in his home, that smacks of Bolshevism.
You're all raising exceptional points, and I like to look at it as this as 100 days of wreckage, 100 days of carnage. The carnage they are inflicting us on purpose is frightening. And one of the things Democrats, I mean, I guess the only person that was never big into polling people on responses was Trump, but the Biden administration or this regime realizes they're not polling well with certain words that are coming out of their mouth. So in the last couple of days, guys, you've had a bunch of people, high officials say they don't believe America is a racist country, yet systemic racism exists.
Yeah.
And
they box themselves into a corner because they have to whip up the black agitators and the people who make money off that, especially the Black Lives Matter promoters. They have to whip them up and keep them happy. But then the ordinary American is no idiot. He sees that America is not a racist country. She sees that America is not a racist country. They say, we don't like being called racist. Okay, you're not racist, but there is systemic racism. The Biden people think we're really stupid.
Well, the reason why they're having to come and say this is because the ratings, there has to be a metric of something. So, and we brought this up the other night, Gary and Rob, that the ratings in every area where this messaging is being sent out is a bomb. I mean, they are just nosediving in the ratings for virtue, right? The virtue message, Rob Kendall, is absolutely failing. And I mean, very few people watch the speech. Nobody watched the Oscars. I mean, nobody watched the Oscars. Nobody's watching sporting events. And again, Ben will say this is anecdotal data, but the one through line through all these things is race, commercials that people, you know, woke commercials, woke messaging. Rob, I mean, I could be crazy, but I really believe that's why they came out with this message.
Well, we certainly on some of our various platforms don't use the term stolen for the election, but one would have to look at the ratings for everything and ponder, were there some voting irregularities that could have led to this? Because the public certainly doesn't appear to be supporting this with their dollars and with their viewing eyes.
And 100, let me just say this, 100% this show does not believe the election was rigged or stolen in any way. Okay, Stalinist people, we do not believe that in any way, Rob Kendall.
It is fascinating though, right? And we've seen really, I don't know how it is where you guys are, but here in Indiana, there is now over the past several weeks been an immense pushback on this critical race theory stuff that's being taught in the public schools. And it shows that the American public is not buying it.
Yeah, people don't like to be called bastards. People don't like to be called racist bastards. People who have gone through revolutionary, incredible work, struggle, some losing their lives, to get Black people the legal rights they deserve as human beings and as Americans, don't like to be told they're racist. And they don't like to be told. I mean, it's very unusual to win an election by calling the voters racist and swine. I think Hillary Clinton learned that when she talked about deplorables. I think anyone would learn it.
Gary Collins.
Well, you know, Americans get really pissed off when you attack apple pie, because they're not saying we're racist. They're saying that racism is baked into the apple pie. That's what they're doing. They're playing a word game with us, and it's insulting. It's very insulting.
My incredibly smart friend, well, I won't say that. Let me back up. A few days ago, I was in a public park in Greenville, South Carolina, one of the most charming towns in the world. And it was a park, and there were Black kids and white kids playing together, Black parents, white parents sitting there watching their kids. And I talked to a young parent, a young white parent, and it's a very, very close relative, very, very, very close relative. And I said to this young man, this is wonderful. This is really wonderful. When I was a child, this couldn't have happened in the beautiful park behind where we lived, Sligo Creek Park in Silver Spring, Maryland, because the parks were segregated. And this young man, white, very close to me, said, I know there's nobody near us. I know nobody can hear you, but I know you lowered your voice, but don't say things like that. And I said, why? You're the only one who can hear me. He said, don't say things like that. The ideological brainwashing has already been baked into his brain like the filling of the crust of an apple pie, Gary. It's like that. That's how powerful the ideological brainwashing is. But people are fighting back.
Yeah, well, when you look at the facts, right? Where is this racism, systemic racism, actually happening? It's in democratically led cities. And
it's in the minds of the people who control the media. I live in Beverly Hills, California, most of the time. Right near me is a very, very famous street called Sunset Boulevard. It's a really, really famous street. There are giant movie billboards all along. I don't know what would it be, Judah, a mile and a half. And within a year, they've all changed so that they're all Black people on all the billboards. A clique within Hollywood is telling us, bow down and worship these people because they're Black.
Well, it's even more frightening than that. If you go into Amazon or the Peacock Network or any of these network streaming services, I believe on one of the networks, and I could be wrong, I think it was the Peacock, it says Black shows. Okay? It says Black shows. Can you, I mean, honest to God, I mean, would you want it to say any, I mean, Italian shows, Jewish shows? I mean, the signal virtuing,
virtue signaling
of saying Black shows, Rob Kendall, click here, is absolutely frightening.
It's terrifying. Go, I'm sorry, Rob, I butted in. Sorry, Ben.
Well, it's the actual racism, right? Yeah. That's the actual racism. And we talk about this quite a bit on the air, and I always ask this question, like, think about your average life. How many people do you know who are actually racist? Like, I don't know many, if any, yet we're led to believe there's a racist on every corner, and they're the most predominant members of society, and that this is the enemy of our time, right? Are these racist people who are running America? And I look around and go, where are they?
Well, what, and you may well say, and I may say so, I would say, it's not illegal to be a racist. Thoughts are not illegal yet, but action racist action is sometimes illegal. But the idea that just to have racist thoughts in your head is a crime, that's really terrifying. That's full-scale Orwellian thought crime. It's very, very dangerous stuff, but it is happening right here and now. Right now, right now, thought crime. I had lunch today with one of the absolutely smartest people I've ever met in my life, a true genius. And he said to me, you know, you are questioning whether or not there really is systemic racism. And you're saying data do not back it up. And it's amazing that you haven't been arrested. And I said to him, well, I had been arrested, as a matter of fact, about 55 years ago, I was arrested for demonstrating in Maryland, my native state of Maryland, for Black people to get the right to vote in a very rural county on the Eastern Shore. So I was arrested for that. But
please tell me there's a mugshot.
What?
Please tell me there's a mugshot.
I'm sure there is.
But anyway. And on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to the of a man that was an inmate, Benjamin Jeremy Stein.
No, just for a few hours.
It's still Ben. Those couple hours changed a person.
Right.
But to everybody in the chat and everybody's gonna be listening to this after, here's the message. Okay. Please go and sign up and subscribe to us on Rumble. We probably will be shifting most of our live shows to the Rumble app and to Rumble. We don't know when that's going to happen because at the same time, we don't know when we're going to be banned. So it's really important that you stay in touch with us and stay on top. So subscribe to Ben's email, benstein.substack.com. It's imperative that you get back on Parler and follow Ben on Parler at Ben Stein. And it's just important that we stay in touch, that we keep, because we don't know how much longer certain platforms will allow us to be on in this Stalinesque government and government we're living in. But I want to thank you all. We're humbled by all your support. And on that note, I want to welcome everybody back to The World According to Ben Stein. Ben, I want to say something because it's not just, yeah, I was on the phone with a friend of mine today, and this is something people say a lot, is that Mark Zuckerberg is bigger than the government. I mean, he's more powerful. He has more power than the president does. And we have these
companies. He can't launch a nuclear missile.
He can launch a social nuclear missile. He could launch
nuclear missile.
You're right, but he could launch a social blackout. He could launch, there's a ton of things that Facebook could do with all of their things that overreach, and it's extremely frightening, the Stalinesque things that the social media companies are doing. That's what my point.
Absolutely terrifying. Gary, you're there on your houseboat. Do you feel? I don't know. You're a tough guy. You fought. You're brave. I'm sure you're a lot stronger and better at self defense and handling yourself than I am, but ever or ever was or could have dreamt of being. Do you feel afraid? Do you feel afraid, or do you think it's just nutcase paranoid right wingers like me who feel afraid?
Well, no, I'm a big pussycat, Ben. I'm a big softy. I hug instead of fight. But no, I have been fearful at times, but I kind of come back to reality of we've been here before. Right. We kind of forget history, even though it recirculates itself and repeats itself. But we've been here, not only as a world, as a nation, as a country, we've been here and we've seen worse. You were in the 60s. You were during that. I remember growing up as a kid in the 70s. Things weren't all that great either sometimes. And I get frightened, but I have faith that the average American is starting to wake up a little bit. I hope.
I hope so too, but I'm
scared. I don't know. I, you know, you raise a great point. And here's the question. Do they have the ability? Not do they have the ability. Will they have the fortitude to wake
that's
up?
That's the question.
We talk about the next 50 year question, Ben Stein, Gary and Rob. That is, do Americans, are they willing to risk their jobs, their security, and wake up? And stand up and shout out. And that's the question.
They need to realize that they will not have a life if they allow this to continue. You can either have it taken away from you unwillingly, or you can fight for it.
Or you can, just, or you can give it away. And that's what so many Americans are doing. They're throwing it away with both hands, saying, I'll do anything. I'll get down on my hands and knees, and I'll beg if you just tell me I'm not a racist, I'll do anything. But it's not illegal to be a racist. I don't think it's a good thing. I've seen, as a Jew, what happens when racism is carried to an extreme. It's horrible beyond words, but it is not illegal to have racist thoughts. That's what scares me to death, gentlemen. We are, or persons of fluid gender, if that's what you are. But what scares me to death is the idea that before long, there will be thought crimes. People will be taken into rooms and asked questions, and depending on their answers, even if they have done nothing wrong, no beatings, no arson, no shooting, they will be able to be punished for their attitudes. We're getting closer. And in terms of people's jobs, we're already there.
You know, you're completely right. But I want to give people hope. I think she's 16. I have a 16-year-old niece that's become a devoted fan of the show. And she's right on the path of where we are and how we think. So there is hope. And she's a very bright girl with a very loud voice. And somebody like my niece truly gives me hope. But Rob, what are your callers saying? Because you get callers on the air all the time. I know they don't give their last name. A lot of them probably say first time caller, long time listener. But what are your callers saying? Are they ever scared to say out loud?
I think that's the biggest thing, right? And this is where this critical race theory that's being taught in the schools comes in. That we have encouraged in specific school districts in central Indiana, groups of people to push back. And they've been able in a fairly quick fashion to make tangible difference. And one of the things I keep stressing to people, especially the public education people, are great at what I call the swarm. And the swarm is, especially on social media, when you do or post something that goes against them, they swarm that account, they swarm that page. They make you think that there's hundreds of thousands of people like them and there's only one or two of you. And I tell people all the time, don't buy the swarm. You write your elected officials, your school board, your state reps, your state senators, because the internet is not real life and people forget that. And that is where people have to keep up the pressure. Go to the school board meetings, go to the town and city council meetings, ignore the swarm.
The fake swarm. So much of what's going on is fake. Mr. Trump
100%.
Used that word fake describes so much of what's going on. Fake systemic racism, fake legal process, fake freedom of speech, fake academic life. And universities now, I'm told by people who are parents of students, don't know anyone young enough to be a student, but except for members of my family, they are taught from a very young age to hate themselves and to hate America. What the hell is going on here? The Russians don't need to fire a shot. The communist Chinese don't need to fire a shot. We are committing suicide. I think we should face it, face the facts. We have a group of people who are aiding and abetting in the suicide of the greatest nation there has ever been, over a completely fake theory.
And Ben, you bring up a brilliant point. And then guys, when they leave school, the programming on television is woke programming. So they're not just being inundated in school, they're being inundated with their cartoons, with the shows they watch, with the songs they listen to. I don't want to say the songs they listen to because I have no idea what they're listening to, but I know for sure with the songs, with the television, movies, it's frightening, Rob, that you know that Marvel or DC has to put a transgender person in when point whatever we can this is what they're getting at home too.
Yeah, you can't even count how few transgender people there are.
I think we talked about this on, was it Tuesday last time I was on? I think we talked about this. So you think about it, the first 12 years basically, so from 5 up until 18, these kids are completely indoctrinated by the public education system. Then you tack 4 more years onto that through the college system, in which they're completely indoctrinated. So there's a 16-year head start of believing these things. And so by the time it's going to take 10 years in the real world to believe that was a giant pile of bull crap they've been sold. And it, you don't want to believe that you've been sold a giant pile of bull crap. So people, most of these people are in their mid 30s before they figure it out.
Well, as a teacher, I'm sorry, Gary, I beg your pardon, please.
Oh, well, what they're doing in the school system, it's very simple. You call it indoctrination, but it's not that. What they're trying to do is eliminate critical thinking. Because what you end up being is a regurgitator. What you do is you hear junk in, junk out, and you don't actually take that information, parse it out, analyze it, and come up to your own, with your own conclusion. So they're trying to eliminate that and do this and almost say it's some sort of mystic theory in a way. You don't have to prove it. It just is. And that's what
they're beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. And if you have to, you know, there's a very famous rich person of the late 19th and early 20th century named J.P. Morgan. And he had a yacht down at the yacht basin in Lower Manhattan. And one of some friend of his asked him how much a yacht like that cost. And J.P. Morgan said, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. And that's on my mind lately because a longtime friend just sent me an email that he is selling his houses. He has a couple of houses and he has bought a 132-foot yacht and is going to spend the balance of his life cruising the earth on his yacht. Great. But he is a very rare, unusually rich and kind of nutty person. But what we are seeing is in America, which is as untethered to reality as this man's yacht is going to be.
I love that word. Ben, that word is perfect. Untethered to reality is a because I want to go expand from that, because let's go on from untethered from reality. So if you're seven, you're 10 years old and you're sitting at home and you're watching things, you know, when we were all younger, we were able to differentiate between fantasy and reality.
Excellent.
We were. I mean, I don't think we were. I mean, but the kids today, I don't know if they could differ. I pray that what they're watching and what they're seeing doesn't add up to them, Rob, because it can add up to it. If you're imposing your Stalin-esque views on gender, on race, and then you walk outside and you see they're not true, I hope children are getting that message of untethered reality.
No, because I agree with what Gary said. They're not being taught critical thinking to examine those sort of things. And I think another major issue is parents have stopped engaging in what their kids learn.
Yeah.
I think, oh, I send my kid to a great school system. They'll just take care of it. No, it's happening in a lot of these Republican areas because the liberals have taken over the school boards and the public education system. So to what Gary said, I think is very accurate that they're not challenging it because they don't possess those abilities in many cases.
Well, it's not just that they don't possess those abilities, but it's incredibly maddening to talk to your own children when they start arguing with you and acting as if they know something when they don't really know anything. I don't know how many. Are you a parent to Robert, Bob? Are you okay?
Not yet. The world has still been spared, but I'm working.
God bless you. And I know, Judah, you are not a parent. Gary, are you a parent? Yes. Are you? No. Okay, well, I am. And
not in the US.
I see what it's like to engage in a dialogue with someone who is very considerably younger than I am, who has not really got a lot of education, who's terribly, terribly smarter, and in many ways very funny, but he knows almost nothing. But he thinks he knows everything. And I have friends, I have a very, very close friend, an incredibly tall, beautiful girl who has a 9 or 10 year old daughter who is being indoctrinated in the most incredibly crude way and yells at her mother when the mother uses certain words that are not racist, that are not sexist, but are ableist because they are criticizing people who are mental, seeming not even criticizing, just noting that such and such a person is retarded. That's racist. Probably I'll get angry mail for saying that word.
Nobody can hear Ben because of the air conditioner. The air conditioner is muffling your sound.
Oh, sorry. I beg your pardon. It's too damn hot in here. But anyway.
Take off your robe.
I don't even know you.
Hey, all right, it's Saturday night, man. Okay. That's all right. Take off the robe. And on that note, if you just, hey now, how you doing, Ben Stein? And on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to Ben Stein, a place where we like to have a little fun, a place, you know, on Parler, we wished everybody a happy weekend. And somebody responded, how can you have a great weekend with all this? You could still have a good weekend and live your life regardless of what's happening. You have to have certain separation sometimes. It's okay to enjoy yourself, because if you don't, you're listening to them. Their goal and their job, the left, the Stalinesque, is to make sure we live in misery. The best way we don't live in misery and say, screw you back, is by enjoying our damn lives. And on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to Ben Stein. Remind everybody to go get that podcast, download it, show them, give us the reviews, please, we beg of you. Get Ben's email, benstein.substack.com. And also go to Rumble and subscribe to Ben's channel. Just type in Ben Stein and subscribe, or The World According to Ben Stein and subscribe. But also it's important that you get Gary's website, simplelifenow.com. He teaches amazing stuff. He's got an amazing podcast. Gary knows how to live. And of course, you could listen to Rob Kendall every day. 93.1 WIBC, bam, the future of conservative talk radio. But we're going to enjoy our lives and we're going to have fun. So screw you. You're not going to take that away from us. I want to get into, though, let's take this a little step further. I want, at the end of the show, guys, tonight, to the people that are listening, we're going to play a little game. Where was Ben Stein when that happened? So start thinking to yourselves now, questions and events in history, where Ben Stein was when that happened. I want to get into, because I got into this with a friend of mine on the phone today, Ben. How far are they willing to go, right? So we know the Oscars or certain things are minute financial, that they're able to lose ratings and lose advertisement because it doesn't affect the bottom line. At a certain point, Ben, virtue signaling is going to... You like you said, you have a fiduciary duty. ESPN is owned by Disney. It's a publicly traded company. Eventually, this will hurt the bottom line.
No, go ahead. Long ago and far away, your humble servant, this fat old man you see before you, spent most of his life writing about breaches of fiduciary duty by officers of public corporations. And this, it seems to me, at some point, the officers and directors of public corporations became untethered from their stockholders. This is sort of what's happening now. That is why officers and directors of public corporations can kiss the ass of Black Lives Matter, even though it's clearly, at least to me, a fraudulent organization, because the stockholders have no clear way of holding them to account. I watched the Berkshire Hathaway annual meeting today on the internet. And Mr. Buffett spoke quite sharply to those who demanded that he have training and teaching about environmentalism and diversity. He basically said, these people own very few shares. People are questioning me about it. When they own a lot of shares, I'll listen to them. So I think the same should be true of large public corporations. That guys who make millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions from their stockholders should be required to show cause why they are insulting their country. Why are you doing it?
So Rob, it was a brilliant point, Ben. And Rob, so we're, and Gary, we're all sports fans. So the NBA, MLB, NFL all survives on these massive contracts given by the networks. And I mean massive contracts. That's how the players are able to get these massive contracts. And what you're bringing up, this critical thinking, Gary, is players aren't critically thinking that this will eventually affect their bottom line, because a network isn't going to pay $2 billion for a sport that 3 million people are watching. And eventually it'll trickle down. The owners could withstand it, but the players are going to be losing money. And you know what? Team valuations are going to go down.
Well, that's, and again, the people who are running a company don't care. They're still making astronomical sums of money. They have managed through some various means, and I actually used to be an expert witness in many of these trials, to insulate themselves from the wishes and will of their own stockholders. And I imagine they will keep on doing it. It's a giant opportunity for plaintiff's lawyers, but they're not taking it up.
Gary.
You know, I'm a big fan of creating kind of a shadow economy, and even, you know, I won't say a shadow government, but what we do is, if there's any people out there right now, but any of your friends, Ben, who have a lot of money, now's the perfect time to start. Me neither. Start up a competitive league to the NBA. The NFL's doing okay, but especially the NBA, they're unwatchable. Professional sports to me today, as a big time sports fan historically, I don't watch any games. I don't watch any sports hardly at all anymore. Almost zero. Start up a league where the players want to play for the game. Don't give them $100 million signing bonuses, $150 million. You know, make them go out and play for the love of the game. And I think the fans will come around and the NBA will just go away. Because LeBron James is about as dumb as AOC. If they had kids, they probably wouldn't be able to breathe because they'd be too stupid. So, you know what I mean? I really think we need to start competing with these and put something, put a product out there that's better. It's not hard.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, the product sucks now. It's not hard to do.
No, I mean, you raise a good point. It's extremely, extremely difficult. But my deeper point, Rob Kendall, is eventually the players aren't going to be getting the salaries because there's not going to be money from the networks. Eventually, the owners of these companies are going to say, no, you can't give out $2 billion to the NBA when they have 2.5 million people watching the game and 15 million people watching the finals, Rob. Eventually, that's going to happen.
Yeah, you saw last year how important television is, which is why the owners of these teams agreed to play in empty stadiums, and they lost hundreds of millions of dollars in all of these sports because the television money was still so valuable. It's the primary driver of revenue in all of these leagues.
65%, 55 to 65%.
And it's really no matter how you slice it up, the NFL has national TV deals. Places like the NBA and MLB tend to be local market deals, but it's still the primary driver of revenue. And the issue here is these up-and-coming players are the ones who should care about it, because it won't happen until the new TV deals have to be negotiated. But you're right, especially in the case of the NBA, you're going to see these major networks that have these television deals say, we can't do it anymore. And that's really going to cut into what owners and teams can dole out in terms of the level of the salary cap.
And are we not already seeing that train coming through the tunnel towards us?
No, Ben, 100% we're seeing it. They have to return money during major award shows to advertisers. At a certain point, people are gonna, and this is what the problem the Biden regime is seeing right now, to go back to how we started the show, they're seeing internal polling that this messaging is not working, that this messaging, that people might not say it out loud, but they don't believe what they're seeing. And that for the most part, people are tethered to reality, no matter how much you try to untether them. And well,
go ahead.
No, go
please,
ahead.
My dear friend.
No.
Years and years ago, many years ago, before probably most of you were born, I was talking to a very close relative, a brilliant woman. And she said she was thinking of leaving this, as she called it, this racist America, and moving, I think it was to Italy. And I remember vividly saying, what are some examples of the racism? And she said something like, it's all around you. She lives in a neighborhood of multi-million dollar dwellings, and her husband made a fortune, he's retired now. And I said, I don't see it. I don't see the racism. I still don't see it. I live in a very nice neighborhood. I don't see the racism. I have some commercial property. I don't see the racism. I don't see the racism. Where is it? Where is it?
Well, nobody sees it. That's the thing. I mean,
except the people who can make money off saying it, like the founders of Black Lives Matter.
And here's the thing that Rob and Gary is, we just like to walk around we like to be humans and shop in the supermarket, shop at stores. If somebody acknowledges us, we acknowledge them regardless of race, creed, gender. One of my favorite things that ever happened, Gary and Rob, is we were on top. I might have brought up this story before. We were on top of the pavilions in extremely gay West Hollywood. And at the time, they were called transsexuals. We're on the roof. They come running up to Ben. And I'm like, oh, shit, what are they going to say to him? And they go, could we please get your picture? And he was like, of course. And that's most people. Most people just want to say hi. They want to be friendly.
And I want to be friendly to them too.
Yes.
And that's what I think is true of most Americans.
And they want to be entertained. They don't want to be proselytized to, Gary. They want to watch a comedy show and it actually be comedy.
And they don't want people telling them their sons are bitches.
Yeah, Gary?
Yeah, telling them their political views and how stupid you are for believing in one thing or in another. But no, I agree. And I always tell people the way you make change is just stop watching pro sports. They suck anyway. Just stop watching it. Just turn it off. And you know what? Maybe have a conversation with your kid. Maybe go out and go for a walk. Yeah. Go do something. You know, instead of sitting on the couch watching a bunch of spoiled brats who have never done one thing in their life to basically live under this umbrella of freedom, to be honest with you, but they tend to criticize the people like me who provided it for them, which pisses me off. And just stop watching it, put your time into something else, and move on. Eventually, they'll get the message. And the NBA's got to be getting the message.
You see, here's the thing. The one metric that you could, everything is numbers. So Netflix used to not release their numbers, right? But now they have the top 10 things that are trending on Netflix, the top 10 things in the world. And what's amazing is a David Spade movie was watched by 59 million people. 59 million people watch COVID or no COVID. But if you look at the shows or the movies that are in the top 10, Rob, most of them are heartwarming shows. They're very non-judgmental. Yeah, they're non-judgmental. They're very non. And it's like I'm looking at Netflix, and Netflix is like, we get it, Cobra Kai. People want to think about the Karate Kid, and the numbers are through the roof. And this is our proof, Rob.
So two things. One, the one sport that is doing really well, at least television ratings wise, is golf. And it's not because people just suddenly, oh my gosh, there's a profound interest in golf. Golf stayed out of the politics. And so I think that's been a huge benefit for them. So if you're going to cancel sports, please, Gary, don't punish me. I need professional golf. That's number one. Number two, a friend of mine on social media posted this, and I thought it was great, so I want to share it. He said, you know, many people voted for Joe Biden because they wanted to forget about the presidency. Like, for whatever reason, I think it's dumb, but people were just offended by Trump. There were a lot of people who were just offended, and they didn't want to deal with the drama that came with the presidency. Biden is doing the exact opposite by shoving this stuff down people's throats. And they didn't vote for Biden because they liked his policies to begin with. And it's going to backfire, and it is backfiring and blowing up in his face. And I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at it.
Now, you raise a great point, Ben. And I want to bring, that's an exceptional point. And everybody said Trump was chaos. I feel way more chaotic right now. I feel as the country, like you've brought up, like who the hell is running it? Our foreign policy is
we don't have a
foreign policy,
which is to ask kiss the Iranians and to walk away from the Abraham Accords, which were one of the great peacemaking achievements of the post-war period. That I've said this many times. I'll say it again. I'll say it till the day I die. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called the children of God. That was Nixon. And that was Trump. Peacemakers. I want to see peacemakers. I don't want to see us sucking up to people whose modus operandi is to kill as many innocent people as possible. That is what I would like to see. That, to me, is going back to a normal, peaceful world.
And Gary, the great point, Ben. And Gary, I have to say that he pays me to say that great point. Gary, you know, with Trump, the chaos was the chaos that the media brought on.
Right.
Yeah. That was
and the
that
FBI.
It was 4 years of chaos, of investigations, of investigations, of investigations, of stories that were absolutely not true. So every day people were waking up to headlines that weren't true, and that was that was the chaos. Now we don't have a leader, and we are truly living in chaotic, frightening times.
Well,
our leader's looking for his mask and his oatmeal. So with that, the problem now is that the media is, if you watch the media, it's almost like they're trying to calm the storm, right? What they do is they just hide everything now. The border is an absolute dumpster fire, and they just ignore it. They just don't even cover it. And Kamala Harris, who's in charge of it, which was a farce anyway, that was done on purpose. She hasn't even been there. And the American public
She has 10 copies of her book.
That story wasn't true, by the way. I think the New York Post writer got fired, which is amazing to me that a New York Post writer got fired for writing what was an inaccurate story. Can you imagine all the writers that should have been fired for the last 5 years, and a conservative news organization fires the one employee for a story that was incorrect?
Gary, your points are so superb, but I'd like to mention last night, Big Wifey and I were watching a documentary about Joe McCarthy. All of you guys are too young to remember Joe McCarthy, but he was a big anti-communist senator from Wisconsin, a beautiful, beautiful state, Appleton, Wisconsin. And he rose to fame by accusing the State Department of harboring a number of communists, and then this Defense Department facility, that Defense Department facility, and the government printing office. And none of these charges came to a lot. Some came to quite a bit. One of the guys they did unearth, Alger Hiss, actually was responsible for the Korean War, and which cost over 50,000 American lives and 1 million Korean lives. And their lives are incredibly valuable too. Korean lives matter. And his investigations only sometimes led to anything. He was censured. He was humiliated. He had his teeth kicked in, but he found much more than all these investigations of Trump, which found absolutely nothing. And yet people say Trump's the bad guy and McCarthy's the bad guy.
Yeah,
McCarthy,
they were chaos.
The American public doesn't know that. The American public has no idea that these, I have friends who are liberal. They literally have no idea that the Russian gate and all this was made up. They have zero clue. They have no clue at all. They think Michael Flynn was guilty. They have no idea that he was targeted. No idea. They don't even know Hunter Biden, his laptop was taken and it has a bunch of incriminating. They don't have any idea.
He left it at the repair shop. Yeah. I don't think it was taken.
Yeah, he left it at the repair shop.
Well, yeah.
And that shows you the brazenness and how stupid he is. But Rob, final thoughts on this?
No, I'm just excited to ask Ben where he was when something important happened.
Okay, and on that note, if you just tuned in, you are listening to The World According to That Man, Benjamin Jeremy Stein. I want to remind everybody, go to Rumble, follow us there, subscribe to us there, and follow the podcast, and subscribe to the email, benstein.substack.com, because when the time comes, and it's coming soon, that we will be banned from YouTube.
I'm not making a joke. I really don't think they will. I think even YouTube, with their almighty power and not responsible to anyone, really could not find much fault with what we say.
And we've already got a strike against us. And they
know, but surely there's more than one strike.
No, Ben, the next one, you get one more strike, you can't live stream for a week. And then after that, gonzo. Please do those things for us. Go to the podcast, give us good reviews. It's very helpful. And again, thank you for all the help you've given us. It's greatly appreciated. We couldn't do this without you. We do it for fun and for free, and we love doing every moment of it. And on that note, let's play. Where was Ben Stein when that happened? So people, get your questions ready. Gary, you're up first.
Where were you, Ben, when I was born in 1970? I won't give the month or date because then someone...
You are kidding. You're that young.
I'm that young. But it's still great looking, you know.
So you are only 51 or 50? Are you kidding?
No.
Do you have a babysitter there with you?
Do I have what?
A babysitter or someone who takes care of you?
I have a babysitter, but we won't talk about that. We can't talk about that on
I was at Yale Law School getting ready to graduate and fighting back against the vicious pig power structure of the Socratic method, as we lawyers call it, of them teaching us, bullying us by teaching us and humiliating us and making us feel stupid. And I said to one of my teachers, if you don't stop doing this, I am going to stand up, take my clothes off, and start reciting a list of Vietnam War dead. And this really happened. And my fellow classmates were so ecstatic about it that they elected me, not by grades, because my grades were good, but not great, to be valedictorian of my class.
Okay.
That's what I was doing.
So, Ben, where were you? We have two questions from here, then I'll get to Rob. Where were you during the moon landing, and where were you during Woodstock?
During Woodstock, let me go backwards. The actual moment of the moon landing, the actual moment of moon landing, I was visiting a family whose daughter was a roommate of my wife's at Vassar College, and watched on their television. It was quite astonishing. I could hardly believe it was happening. And where was I during? What was the second?
The moon landing.
Moon, I got that. I was at a friend.
Woodstock.
Well, wait a minute. By the time we got to Woodstock, we were 500,000 strong. I was, I think I was working at a Wall Street law firm called Revis and McGrath, which has since gone into eternity. And, and then later that, I think later that week of Woodstock, wifey and I went off to, Europe on a bargain charter plane, and we had a tour of Europe as a newlywed couple.
They say, by the way, just oddly enough, they say if everybody that said they went to Woodstock actually went there, it'd like fill the state of Pennsylvania. Rob,
I wouldn't have gone there if you paid me $100,000.
Yes, you would have. 100%.
No, I wouldn't.
Come on, son.
No, I wouldn't.
Come on, son. 100 grand in cash.
No.
I find that hard to believe. Rob Kendall, you're up.
I tried to tell us he was poor earlier. He turned out 100 grand to go to a rock concert.
Well, but it was a very dirty rock concert. I've been to lots of rock concerts. I like rock.
Okay, Rob, you're up.
Where were you when you first saw Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and when did you realize how well received your part was?
That's a great second part.
That's a good one. I first saw it at a screening room at Paramount Pictures. It was a Paramount picture, or at least it was filmed at Paramount. And I was friends at the time with the head of Paramount, a wonderful human being named Michael Eisner. And I asked him if I could see it. He consulted with John Hughes, the writer, producer, director. John Hughes said it was fine. I watched it in a screening room. I was the only person in the room besides the projectionist. And I thought, this isn't going anywhere. I think it's funny and it's wonderful and very insightful, but I don't think anyone will want to watch it. But then I went to the opening at Westwood Village, which is the neighborhood where UCLA is. And my wife and I went to see it. And we were sitting in the window of a Chinese restaurant afterwards, and a whole bunch of people came by and kept going like this, and all kinds of things, signs of approval. Walking by saying Bueller. So at that point, I thought we had something.
That's Rob, I like the second part of that. Like, when did you realize that that was? Great question, Rob. That's why they pay you the big bucks in Indiana. Ben, where were you during the riots? Because I wasn't here during the riots.
There have been so many riots. Which riots?
I believe they're referring to the Rodney King.
Oh. Well, I was driving along Hollywood Boulevard at the intersection of Hollywood and La Brea, and I saw two police cars passing each other, and one of the drivers stuck out his hand and went slap five with another driver, which I think meant that they knew that the verdict had gone the policeman's way, and so they were very happy. That night, I went out to my house in Malibu, and I think with my son, And in the middle of the night, I could smell very heavy smoke. Now, our house is way, way, way out in Malibu, in a very poor, humble part of Malibu called Trancas. And it smelled like there was a brush fire. And I remember I said to my son, it must be a brush fire. It wasn't. The city of L.A. was burning, and the smoke was so thick, it was wafting 30-some miles, at least 30-some miles, out to our house in Malibu. It was scary.
Wow. Gary Collins.
Oh, another one. Oh, geez.
I was listening.
I was so engaged.
You're engaged at 16?
Okay.
Where were you when Van Halen 1 came out in 1970?
I'm not a big Van Halen fan, so I'm sorry. I'm sorry.
Okay, into music, somebody wants to know, where were you when the Beatles played the Ed Sullivan Show?
What year was it, 63?
64.
I was a student at Columbia and having a wonderful time at the Alpha Delta Phi fraternity, which was one of the turning points of my life. I am a big, big believer in the Greek system, and I had a great, great time there. And I feel sorry for people who don't get to be in fraternities. I think fraternities are absolutely great stuff. Like mine was life-changing, and I'm profoundly, profoundly grateful to the people at the Alpha Delta Phi fraternity who took me in and gave me breakfast. They took me in and treated me like a king. And I got a wonderful, 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 wonderful 3 years out of that.
Okay, so where were you during the OJ chase?
I was, for much of it, I was driving through Brentwood, right by the scene of the crime, not where the actual murders took place, but by the restaurant where Ron Goldman was a waiter, a busboy, or whatever, a sous chef, whatever he was. I used to eat at that restaurant all the time. And I was driving by that and thinking to myself, if OJ didn't do it, who did do it? And if OJ didn't do it, how did they possibly find a drop of Nicole's blood on his floor of his bedroom? How did that happen? And I saw the way the trial was going. It was a racial verdict, acquittal because of race. And I was in LA and I was really, really upset about it. I watched the slow car chase on a television in Malibu, and boy, I sure didn't like it.
Isn't that amazing though, that we're all old enough? Like that was an amazing thing, that car chase. I mean, amazing. It wasn't even a car chase. It was in slow motion. It was like they were going 25 miles.
I know.
Al Cowlings was driving. And how many people could say they lived through such a surreal experience? I mean, one of your most famed athletes, loved athletes, driving.
I knew him, Jude. I knew him. He was a big fan of Mr. Chow, a very wonderful restaurant. I'm going there in an hour and 5 minutes. I'm going there for dinner and right now, tonight. And he used to sit, for some reason, he used to sit at the table right next to the table where wifey and I sat. And I got to know him. He would be slab five and say hello. So I knew him very, very slightly. I'm sure he didn't even know my name, but he knew he had seen me there a lot. And I was pretty amazed and horrified.
Somebody said there are so many of your memories are associated with restaurants.
I used to go out to restaurants almost every night. But
he
now
did, and he wrote. And one of his famous articles that he wrote was, with GQ, was your Monday night at Morton's.
It was
right?
A column I wrote about life at Morton's, which is the best restaurant there ever was in the history of the world.
Okay, Rob, I see you wanting to jump in. Everybody, Rob, how good does Rob look in his hair? My God, you are an Adonis, Rob. Say the name of the people that gave you that transplant.
WeGrowHairIndy.com.
Okay, Rob, what's your question?
Ben, where were you when Elvis died?
Ah, that is a very good question. I was writing what's called a three-generational saga about the founding and growth and exploding growth of our glorious Los Angeles. And to do that, I was going up the Owens River Valley, which is where the Owens River was, which is where we stole the water from to irrigate Los Angeles. And it apparently been one of the most fertile agricultural areas in the world. And when LA stole the water,
that's right,
it became a desert. And I was driving up there to look at it with a very close friend, a girl who turned out to be kind of a lunatic, but she was a very close friend. And we heard on the radio at the news, heard somebody say the opening bars, they played the opening bars of Hound Dog. And I said to her, Elvis has died. And sure enough, and I cried bitter tears. I always loved Elvis. I still love him. I think he was great.
Plus, you met him at the White House.
I met him at the White House and shook hands with him and talked to him for a very, very short time.
Rob, you haven't heard this story?
No. I mean, obviously, I know he went and met Nixon at the White House, which I should have put two and two. Please tell me, please.
Well, I was having, there's at the White House, there used to be the White House mess, named for the Navy mess, where very, very high officials could eat. I was not high enough at all to eat there. But my father was, and he and I were having lunch there one day, and he leaned forward and said to me, would you recognize Elvis Presley if you saw him in person up close? And I said, of course anyone would. And he said, well, don't turn around, or if you do, turn around very slowly. He's sitting right behind you with Bob Haldeman, who was White House Chief of Staff. I said, oh, you're right. And I turned around, and there was Elvis Presley, big as life. And I ignored my father saying, sit down. And I went over to him. It was less than 3 feet. And I said, Mr. Presley, sir, everyone in the world is your fan, but I'm your biggest fan. I love you. I think you're the greatest ever. And it's an honor to meet you. And I won't bother you any further. And he said, thank you very much.
And on that note, I love it. I, you know, and this is Robin, everybody, these are my experiences. And this is what I've gotten to hear for 18 years. So it's like that time when I've said this before, when we were dog walking and you told me how you got fired from the White House. It was Rumsfeld calling you on the phone and saying, Ben, do you like your job? And you saying, yes. And he said, I think it's time to start looking for another one. And Ben is telling me this story just matter of factly. And I'm thinking to myself, regardless of your thoughts on Rumsfeld, I'm like, he got fired by Donald Rumsfeld. How cool is that?
And, well, it wasn't cool at all.
I know. You know what, Ben? It was, because look at the career that it spawned. And it wasn't cool at the moment, but my God, what a career. And on that note, I want to thank everybody for listening to The World According to That Man, Ben Stein. We hope we brought a little peace, a little joy, a little fun into your lives. You've brought that into ours. I want to remind everybody, go to rumble.com, subscribe to Ben, and Rumble our shows over there. Go download our podcast, but also most importantly, subscribe to the email, benstein.substack.com, because we will be updating you. We'll be sending you messages if there are any changes, and we want you to come with us. And that's extremely important to us. So thank you. I want to say a little prayer there was a stampede in Israel where 45 people were killed. My nephew, thank God, is okay, but he lost his best friend. It is terrible. And my prayers are with those people. Just a horrible thing and a weird way to end, but they are in my prayers. They are in my thoughts. Gary Collins, you can find Gary Collins at thesimplelifenow.com. Download Gary's podcast. They are amazing. Rob, you could listen to Rob. You could stream his show, but tell them where they could stream your show.
93.1 WIVC, weekdays 9 to noon Eastern, WIVC.com. And that Ben Stein Elvis story is why I'm here.
God bless you, sir. God bless you, sir.
That's good to know. And of course, you could find Ben on Parler at Ben Stein. You could find Ben at spectator.org. And like I said, if you could throw a few shekels their way, donation-wise, they're an amazing publication. You could also find some of his articles on Newsmax. But most of all, you could find them here at The World According to Ben Stein. Share it along, because people, that's Ben Stein. It's Ben freaking Stein, okay? I mean, think about how lucky we all are. that we're in the presence of Ben Stein.
Oh, that you just stole that from The Wolf of Wall Street. It's very funny, though. God bless you.
No, I didn't. I've never seen it.
You're very kind, Jude. Whatever I'm paying you, it's not enough.
And I always want people to think about it like this. Ben is like the brilliant Gump. He's genius Gump. He's been in places in history and time that have had such significance, and only Ben Stein was there. And we get to hear those freaking stories and
talk
to him.
Let's talk next time about me and Gorbachev and Yeltsin. That's a good story.
Oh, wow. And on that note, Ben, I want to wish everybody a great night. Have a great rest of your weekend. We will see you on Tuesday. Ben, please take us out.
Hey, I'll always love you. Because my heart is true. See, come closer. And I'll tell you of the ABCs of love. God bless you.
Was that an Elvis song?
No, Frankie.
How could you not sing it? Take us out with an Elvis song.
You're right. We're caught in a trap. We can't walk out because I love you too much
baby.
Why can't you see
what you're doing to me?
When you something or other. Anyway, it's too sad.
And on that note, everybody, have a great night. We will see you Tuesday night.
God bless you, everybody. Good luck on the water, my friend. Good luck on the water. God bless you.